is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday. It is a White Sox Weekly Saturday, as it is each and every Saturday. 2-hour edition during the season, and we are fresh off of a White Sox winner. I'm not going to lie. My mood is dramatically improved when we're coming off of a Friday night winner, when I can come in on Saturday morning and talk about a White Sox win. It is certainly better to just pick an arbitrary endpoint, let's say one game ago, and say the White Sox are 1-0 in their past one games, as opposed to saying, oh, well, they're 1-8 in their previous nine. So we're going to call them the 1-0 White Sox in their last one as they try to build a winning streak today. Aaron Civale will take the mound for the second time as a member of the Chicago White Sox, and he will be opposed by Jose Berríos of the Blue Jays in Rogers Center today. Of course, 2:07 first pitch. We'll officially start the pregame show at 1:30. But as I always like to say, White Sox Weekly, it's essentially an extended version of your pregame coverage for White Sox baseball. Going to cover a lot about what you may have missed this week, what's going on with the White Sox prospects, because I know a lot of White Sox fans are very intrigued. We're actually going to talk to James Fox of Future Sox Podcast, as he was the one who actually broke the news that Grant Taylor was getting the call. So James is plugged in to the White Sox farm system. He's going to join us at 12:30 today. Courtney Finnecombe of the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, she's going to hop on at noon. She's a diehard White Sox fan. I'll pick her brain on how she feels about where the White Sox are at right now. And we've got plenty more to talk about as well. Lots of fun sound from the week as well. Len Casper hopped on with Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. I'll share with you a portion of that. And again, plenty of other things to discuss. I'd say the biggest feat that came from this past week regarding the White Sox was not anything the White Sox did. It was actually their opponent, Nolan Arenado, who was on the South Side as the Cardinals had a three-game series against the White Sox. And Arenado stepped to the plate with history on the line.
Arenado gets a hold of one in the air. Deep left center, and it is gone. And that is number 350 for Nolan Arenado.
Now, I think most people would all agree that Arenado, essentially, I think, is already a Hall of Famer. He can hang him up tomorrow, and I think in all likelihood he would get the votes. But to hit that 350 mark, that we just love round numbers in baseball. And so 350 home runs, Arenado becomes the 11th primary third baseman in Major League Baseball history to reach 350 career home runs. In addition to that, you're probably well aware of how good of a glove man Arenado is. That was certainly on display for the three games that the Cardinals were in at Wright Field. He certainly really hasn't lost much. And even though he finally did not win a gold glove last season for the first time in forever, basically, he still is excellent defensively. And I would take him, I think, maybe Matt Chapman is the only third baseman I'd take over Arenado still at this point. But I'd have to look through the rest of the third baseman around Major League Baseball. But Arenado also now is amongst legendary people in baseball history. There were, prior to Arenado's 350th homer the other day on Thursday, there were six major leaguers who had 350 home runs and had earned 10 or more gold gloves. Johnny Bench, Mike Schmidt, Willie Mays, Ken Griffey Jr., Andrew Jones, and Al Kaline. So you had those six. Well, you can add number seven, as Arenado is now in that club. And Arenado became a member of an even more select club, and that is major leaguers who have hit career homer number 350 on the South Side playing the White Sox. Now, that's not as significant as the previous club, but Arenado joined Torrey Hunter, the former Minnesota Twins center fielder who did it back on September 13th, 2015, when Raitt Field was called U.S. Cellular Field, and Yankees Hall of Famer Mickey Mantle, the Mick, 7, July 13th, 1961, at Old Comiskey Park. So Arenado, a little bit of history for the Cardinals and all the fans that were in attendance on Thursday for the doubleheader. Boy, rough week all in all for the White Sox that bled over from the previous week when the White Sox had lost 5 in a row on the road before coming home and dropping those 3 to the Cardinals. The White Sox did have some fight, though. In they lost the first game of the doubleheader on Thursday 5-4. And then it looked like we were going sideways on Thursday afternoon. Game 2, the Cardinals had jumped out to a 6-2 lead, and it felt like there wasn't going to be much of a fight. But I will give the White Sox credit because they continue to show resilience all season long, and Andrew Benintendi did exactly that with an opportunity to tie the game late when he stepped to the plate with the bases loaded.
Bases loaded, the pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right. It's a grand slam. This game is tied.
First pitch attacking. Talkman, now Benintendi. They got fastballs and they did not miss them.
Andrew Benintendi with a game tire. He clears them all.
So that came in the bottom of the seventh inning in game 2 of the doubleheader against the Cardinals. Benintendi homered or hit a grand slam to tie the game up. Unfortunately, the Cardinals were too much for the White Sox in extra innings. Went to 10. Cardinals put 2 on the board in the 10th, and the White Sox failed to score. So the Cardinals swept the doubleheader, and that put the Sox on an 8-game losing streak for the week. But good thing the White Sox were able to get right last night. And again, it started with Andrew Benintendi.
First offer. And he drives this one in the air to right, and she's going to go. First pitch swing, Andrew Benintendi with number 8, and it's 1-0.
Now, interestingly enough, that home run went 425 feet, which at that moment was the longest home run of the White Sox season. And then, an inning later, Luis Robert Jr. decided he was going to best that.
And the White Sox are hoping Adrian Hauser makes a start. There's a deep drive to left, and it's way out of here. Luis Robert Jr. got all of it. A 2-run homer. It's 5-0.
And the White Sox were on their way to snapping their 8-game skid as they went on to beat the Blue Jays 7-1. In the game, though, Wilkelman Gonzalez was called up, making his major league debut for the White Sox. Wilkelman Gonzalez is the third member of the trade in which the White Sox acquired 4 players for Garrett Crochet from the Red Sox in the offseason. Now, Wilkelman Gonzalez is the third member of those 4 players to make his major league debut with the White Sox. Of course, you have Chase Meidroth, who was the first to arrive. Kyle Teal, about 2 weeks in, or 2 weeks ago, arrived himself, and now Wilkelman Gonzalez has made his debut. He did so last night in relief, and he picked up his first career strikeout.
Pitch, swing, and a miss. Strike 3 on a curve.
10 pitches, 9 strikes.
That's great.
Now, I do wonder if Will Venable pushed Wilkelman Gonzalez a little bit too long yesterday. He gave him a second inning of work. Gonzalez did get into a little bit of trouble, gave up an earned run, but for the most part was able to get through it fairly unscathed. He goes 37 pitches, 24 total for strikes in 2 innings of work, 1 earned run, and a couple of strikeouts on the day, including that first of his career that you heard right there. So a nice little debut. And by the way, also some pretty filthy stuff. He made Bo Bichette absolutely look silly yesterday on one of his pitches. So it's a fun thing to watch all of these players arrive and have these moments amidst what is still a difficult season on the whole for the White Sox, but there's still a lot of positives, and debuts like Wilkelman Gonzalez can continue to make you optimistic about where the White Sox are at. Part of the reason why Wilkelman Gonzalez was called up yesterday was to offset both Cam Boeser and Davis Martin being placed on the 15-day injured list, and I do say Davis Martin is, for me, the biggest concern because he's dealing with a right forearm strain. Now, the optimistic view on this is that Will Venable said Martin, it's just something they're being cautious about. And I think because of the White Sox record, because you understand that they're not in a playoff push mode where every single win is valuable. If a pitcher, any pitcher, honestly, on the staff mentions that something is an issue, I think the White Sox are going to be extremely cautious. There's no need to push any of these players at this point with the season they're at right now. Of course, you want to win games, but more importantly, try and make sure that these guys are all healthy as they get the experience this year. So Davis Martin placed on the 15-day injured list with the strained right forearm. And again, we're just hoping that it's not too serious. Cam Buser placed on the 15-day injured list with a left shoulder strain. So he's dealing with that as well, which opened the spot for Wickelman Gonzalez. Tyler Gilbert was also recalled. So Wickelman Gonzalez, again, you had him making his major league debut yesterday for the White Sox. And Grant Taylor, another prized young prospect who has recently made his debut for the White Sox, had the opportunity to start yesterday. Now, he only went one inning, and that was exactly what we were told. That was the game plan from Will Venable. Grant Taylor was the opener yesterday. He went one inning, struck out one hitter, did not give up a hit, did not walk anybody, goes 13 pitches, had an easy, breezy time with the first inning. Now, I know White Sox fans got a little bit excited about seeing him all of a sudden pop up, but it was never realistic. He had started the season at Double A with Birmingham as a starter, working about three inning stints, and Chris Getz, Brian Bannister, the White Sox front office decided they wanted to partially to limit his innings, but also to get him to a point where they want to see what his role is, how they're going to carve it out in the future. They pulled him back, made him a reliever at Double A. He absolutely dominated and then arrived here at the major league level and has been very successful so far. Only one outing where he's given up any runs when he gave up two to Texas back on June 14th. That was his third appearance, but he's gone five. He's had five appearances now, and in four of them, he's shut the opponent down pretty seamlessly. He's got six strikeouts in five total innings. So Grant Taylor basically hitting the triple digits, doing everything that you would expect a young flamethrower would. But again, he was used as the opener, which was interesting because you wonder, okay, what is the plan for Grant Taylor moving forward? And I found this interesting on the White Sox Talk podcast earlier this week with Chuck Garfine. Grant Taylor joined Chuck, and Chuck asked Grant about how he views himself. Do you still think of yourself as a starter?
We'll see. We'll see come next year.
Okay. Now, why do you say we'll see?
That's something we talked about maybe revisiting come spring training. And then at that point, it's my job to show that, you know, that I'm, you know, one of our top five guys. And, you know, if not, that's on me.
So you hear the competitive nature right there from Grant Taylor. Again, that was with Chuck Garfine on the White Sox Talk podcast. And you can just hear he still views himself as a starter and wants to be a starter. And I get that. Any good pitcher wants to be a starter if they can handle it. The question is, will Grant Taylor, who's already had Tommy John surgery and dealt with some shoulder issues of his own, is he somebody who can handle a full workload? I actually talked with Keith Law about Grant Taylor and what his future is in the big leagues last week on White Sox Weekly. And Keith and I both kind of came to the agreement that if Grant Taylor can be a lights out, high leverage arm in the pen, and you feel comfortable about where he's at, and you don't necessarily, if you're concerned about the long-term future, if you have a prized young asset, even if it's, you know, if you can have that lockdown reliever in your pen to turn to, which honestly, that's something the White Sox have been lacking over the last couple of years. So to have that potentially with Grant Taylor is very intriguing. So we'll see how this year goes, but you heard from Grant Taylor say, hey, we'll see. You can tell he certainly is going to try and drive and prove that he can handle the workload. And that's something that I'm sure the White Sox front office and Grant Taylor will revisit this offseason prior to spring training, and we'll see how it plays out. But it's just fun to watch him dominate even in even if it's only in one-inning stints here at the major league level. One more here from Grant Taylor before we take a quick timeout, because this will lead to our next conversation. Grant Taylor is former college teammates with Paul Skeens at LSU, and Chuck asked Grant about potentially squaring off against Paul Skeens in the future.
That'd be awesome. That's obviously, end goal is to, play for a long time, play against a lot of people, win games. But I think, on the side, there's, I'll get to play against a lot of my friends, a lot of guys that I, grew up playing against. There's a guy from my high school with the Nats right now that I'll get to play against. You got Dylan Cruz and Paul Skeens and, different guys that are in the big leagues and, other guys that are in the minor leagues that are hopefully there soon, like Trey Morgan, AAA, and, Paul Gervais in AAA. So I think it'll be fun to be able to play against them as well as, against the rest of the league.
So Grant Taylor right there talking about playing against some of his former college teammates and the possibility of squaring off against them in the pros. In particular, Paul Skeens, he's the headliner, of course, because both Taylor and Skeens, before Taylor did have to have Tommy John surgery, formed a dominant 1-2 punch at LSU. And it's interesting because could we see Grant Taylor be the starter one day against Paul Skeens the next time the White Sox and Pirates actually do face off? I guess it won't be the next time because they do play each other right shortly after the All-Star break. I wouldn't envision Grant Taylor would be taking the start this year, but certainly something to keep an eye on for next season, and I would love to see it. And I would also have loved to seen something that very easily could have happened on Thursday, not at Wright Field, but actually at Comerica Park. But baseball fans were robbed of, I'd say, a showdown between the best two pitchers in baseball, because we could say a couple of managers, but I think one in particular is more at fault than the other. We'll get to that next. Skeens versus Skubal should have happened on Thursday, and it didn't, because I believe Pirates manager Don Kelly, I think he was a bit scared. And that bums me out as a baseball fan, because we were robbed of what should have been a great matchup on Thursday. We'll get to that in a moment. Sox fans, the new City Connect uniforms are here, celebrating the legacy of the White Sox and the Bulls. This look honors Chicago's impact on both diamond and court. Catch the team in the iconic uniforms every Friday night at home this season. Grab tickets and shop the full collection at White Sox Team Store. For more info, head to whitesox.com/city. I'm Jeff Meller. When we come back, we'll talk about why we didn't get to see Skeens versus Skubal on Thursday night right here on White Sox Weekly.
To three.
Paul Skeens will take the mound here in Detroit. Swing and a miss, struck him out. I guess that was a high sweeper.
You know Tarik Skubal's going to come out and look to dominate.
3-2.
Swing and a miss, a slider. Guess what? He's got other stuff too.
And a swing and a miss, struck him out on an inside fastball. Second strikeout for Paul Skeens.
0-2 coming. Wave and a miss. There's the changeup.
One more strikeout for 100 on the year for Skeens.
Yep.
And there it is.
1-2. That is strike three. It's a changeup. It fades downstairs and in on Canario.
Gets the strikeout over the curveball. He strikes out four of the first nine batters he faces.
Wave and a miss. Oh, the curveball. Here's one of today's specials.
Strikes him out.
Two in a row at 99.
This guy's something else.
1-2. Wave and a miss. Good night.
Oh, no. I mean, this is what nightmares are made of. He has been the guy, man. Every outing he comes out, he gives the Tigers a real chance to win ball games.
And he struck him out with a curveball. Is it three straight curveballs?
I think so, yeah.
He's another strikeout victim. That is number seven for Paul Skeens. And there it is. He strikes out nine. Six innings of work.
So that was Thursday. You heard Paul Skeens dominate. You heard Tarik Skubal dominate. They both pitched at Comerica Park on Thursday, but they pitched in two separate games. It was a doubleheader, split doubleheader in Detroit, because the Pirates and Tigers, just like the White Sox, had their game with the Cardinals postponed. Same thing in Detroit on Wednesday evening. So they had a doubleheader. Now, Skeens was always slated to pitch on Thursday. Scooble was originally scheduled to pitch on Wednesday. So no harm, no foul. I understand they were going to miss each other. I'm not calling or advocating for a manager to manipulate his rotation to have two aces line up. That's not what I'm asking for. What you had fall into your lap was Scooble pushed back to Thursday because the game got postponed due to rain, and Skeens aligned and ready to go on Thursday as well. And for a brief moment, there was actually a probables that was floated out there that had Skeens and Scooble lined up to pitch the first game of the Thursday doubleheader. However, I'm going to put it on Don Kelly because AJ Hinch actually explained his thought rationale prior to the game. Hinch was asked about why, from his end, Scooble and Skeens, why he would avoid that matchup. And here is AJ Hinch's explanation. Quote, "I'll make it really simple from our standpoint. I went to Tarek and asked him which game he wanted. He said the early one. At that point, we're going to lock in Tarek for the game that he can prepare for. I don't know what went into their decision, why Skeens is in game two versus game one. That's a good question for Donnie," the Pirates manager, Don Kelly. "Put him on the spot. I'm going to take care of my guy and let the baseball work itself out how it does. I guess I could have gone to Tarek and said, hey, Skeens is pitching game two, so you're going to move to game two. And I could imagine, while cool, he would have said, I'm going to pitch in game one because he was planning on it. And again, Skeens was lined up to be the starter in game one. You rob baseball fans, Don Kelly, of a Skeens-Scooble matchup. The two, I think most people would agree, those are probably your two best pitchers in all of baseball. Scooble, the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner. Skeens didn't win the Cy Young last year, but he won the Rookie of the Year, and probably if he would have had a full season, would have won the NL Cy Young. He would have even usurped Chris Sale, but he didn't get a chance to pitch a full season last year. Skeens, ERA under two right now. Scooble looking like he's going to repeat as the AL Cy Young Award winner for his seconds this season. You could have lined him up. And oh, by the way, the Pirates are 29-46 right now. What are you doing? Why not? You missed the moment, Don Kelly. You could have let those two square off. They probably would have upped their games ever so slightly because they would have brought even more out of each other. And instead, I don't know. I assume Don Kelly just wanted to try and scrap out another victory and figured if he had Skeens going against the Tigers in the game that Scooble was not pitching, he had better odds of winning. And so, congratulations, Pirates. You split the doubleheader. Scooble won the first game. Skeens won the second game. And baseball fans across America who could have tuned in to watch that game didn't have the chance to because Don Kelly wanted to make sure that the Pirates could pick up their 28th win of the season. Just bums me out. You know, Rob Manfred should have stepped in and basically mandated, hey, I know you want to pitch Skeens in the game too. You know what? Let him pitch against Scooble. It's scared managing and opportunity missed. You could have had the one lone time during the baseball season when all eyes would have been locked in on a Pirates game. The Tigers are probably going to the playoffs. So no problem for AJ Hinch. But Don Kelly, you disappoint me. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTVC HD2 Chicago. A Good Karma Brands radio station.
Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win an exclusive City Connect package. One lucky fan will receive some of the best City Connect gear, including a jersey, sweatshirt, and more. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Up next, Courtney Finicum of the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast and diehard White Sox fan joins me right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jeff Meller as we get you set for White Sox and Blue Jays game number 2 of 3 coming your way from Rogers Center. 2:07 first pitch. Officially, the pregame coverage will start at 1:30, but It's Saturday, which means we're in extended White Sox pregame coverage, as we do each and every Saturday. White Sox Weekly here for you 2 hours prior to our pregame show. Hey, Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, hot dog, drink, bag of chips, cookie, plus a souvenir 125th anniversary water bottle. Includes all fees. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. All right, my next guest, she is a diehard White Sox fan. She wears it on her social media sleeve and platforms. She is a host on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, the Pitch and Moan portion of that, and cleverly named. I always enjoy checking it out. She recently had White Sox starter Adrian Hauser on the podcast, and she let me know that she's got Aaron Rowand in the work as well coming up next week, I believe. So Courtney Finnecombe joins me here on White Sox Weekly. Courtney, happy Saturday. How are you?
Jeff, happy Saturday. Thank you for having me on. And hey, we actually have a win to celebrate today. What a concept, right?
I am not going to lie. I definitely felt better about the White Sox picking up a win. I started the show by talking about how my mood is just so much more improved when the White Sox win a ball game, even if it's coming off of an 8-game losing streak. It just feels better when the White Sox win a ball game the next day.
I do feel like the sun is shining a little bit better in Chicago today when the Sox squeeze out a nice win yesterday as well. So, yes, I am agreeing with you. My mood is always better when that team wins.
All right, Courtney. So, and you're always very vocal on X, on, you know, the social media platforms about watching the White Sox games and, you know, venting your frustrations. For the most part, I will say, I think if Sox fans have had if you've come in with realistic expectations this season, for the most part, I've been fairly upbeat about what I've seen from the White Sox this year, understanding that it's a work in progress. There's a lot of young players who are making their debuts as we speak all season long. And, you know, those are the critical pieces. What's been your outlook now as the White Sox are, you know, currently 24-52, close to approaching the halfway mark of the season?
One thing I will say, yes, you know, they're 24-52, which obviously is a disappointing record and then some. However, I think we can all agree that the way this team is playing compared to last year is definitely a difference. You know, one thing that I've really noticed about the young players that have come up is their energy, their enthusiasm. You know, you have a guy like Kyle Teal who every time he gets on base, he's clapping his hands, he's excited. You get a lot of that with these young guys now. And I feel like that is a very, very strong difference from the rebuild from a few years ago. So the outlook that I have right now with this team is continuing to bring up some top prospects. You know, I would love to see Colson Montgomery get up here at some point. I think it's very exciting that we've had three out of the four guys from the Garrett Crochet trade up here now. You know, those are the kind of things that I'm starting to pay more attention to, because at some point, this needs to start coming together for the White Sox and the Sox fans that need to see this coming together. You know, it's encouraging to see the call-ups, but at the end of the day, these guys got to produce at the major league level. It's exciting to see, you know, the guys getting hits in Charlotte. That's a very hitter-friendly ballpark, and minor league pitching is a little different than major league pitching, as we all know. So they got to come up here and produce, and that really is my outlook going into the rest of the year. Seeing these guys come up and showing that they can be Major League Baseball players.
Courtney Finnecombe of the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Yeah, I agree with you. It's definitely something that is keeping my interest with the White Sox this year, and the fact that, for the most part, guys like Chase Meidroth and Kyle Teal have brought the energy. I completely agree with you there. I will say, what is your thought on Edgar Caro so far? Because he's a lot of fun. He is somebody who, inside the clubhouse, the pitchers are always talking about how what he does behind the plate, they're very impressed for a kid as young as he is to have that type of presence that he already has behind the plate. My one concern here, Courtney, and this might be unpopular, because for the most part, you know, a lot of people, I think, are very excited about Caro. But my concern is that, and this is probably not a reflection on Edgar Caro, but he's somebody who too often for me has been hitting cleanup. And honestly, for as much as he gets on base as a catcher, that's nice. But it concerns me that Will Venable feels the need at times to turn to Edgar Caro in the cleanup spot because it doesn't feel like he has any alternatives. Where are you at with Edgar Caro right now as a young player? Are you still excited about him, or do you think my criticism or concern about him right now, not really having a home run and the lacking the extra base hits, is a legitimate concern?
Well, I think that's a very legitimate concern. But unfortunately, as we've seen, you know, Venable does not have a ton of consistent hitters to work with. I mean, how many games have the Sox lost by one run? I mean, it's been an absurd amount. So I feel 20. Like
I
as of right
now, I believe it's 20, Courtney, 4-20.
There you go. 20. Exactly. So, you know, that I feel Will Venable is handcuffed. I mean, who do they have to put in, you know, the cleanup spot right now? They don't have many guys. So I feel like Venable thinks, well, Carroll's getting on base. He'll give us a good at bat. That's our option right now. Now, I will say this is a rare thing to say about the Sox, especially with, you know, kind of some of the trades that have gone on. But I do think that the White Sox won that Caro trade. I mean, Giolito, God bless the guy. He was great for us, but has not been the same pitcher since he's been traded. I think that at the end of the day, the Sox may actually have the catching position figured out, which I can't remember, probably since A.J. Pierzynski was the last time that's gone on. So I'm encouraged by Caro. Again, I think he's competent behind the plate. He's a good offensive player. I think once the Sox get an actual competent offense around him, his flaws and his lack of power is not going to show as much.
That's fair. Courtney Finnecombe joining me right here on White Sox Weekly. She does the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. And she mentioned to me, you mentioned A.J. Pierzynski, so perfect opportunity to bring it up. You mentioned to me that you have Aaron Rowan lined up. He'll be joining you next week right on the pod. What's something you're going to ask Aaron Rowan about that you've been thinking about as the White Sox get set to celebrate the 2005 World Series? They'll be unveiling, obviously, the Mark Burley statue on the July 11th weekend. So what are you looking forward to ask Aaron Rowan about on your podcast here soon, Courtney?
Well, I think we all know that Aaron Rowan sort of personified the grinder rules with the White Sox. You know, hard-nosed player, did all the little things right. He also was a coach in the organization for a few seasons as well. So I'm going to be interested to hear certainly his thoughts on the Burley statue unveiling, him as a teammate, all the 05 memories, but also his thoughts on this current White Sox team. What does he see that he likes? I know Aaron is still a big baseball fan. He pays attention to the team. I will be curious his thoughts on if this team is becoming fundamentally sound, if they're becoming sort of that grinder team that we love on the South Side. I am looking forward to having Aaron on. I think he'll have some great insight. And, of course, always fun to celebrate the 05 team, right?
Of course. No doubt, yeah. Courtney Finnecombe joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Miller. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. So we've talked a lot about the players who have arrived at the major league level. What about some of the players who have yet to arrive, but we're still very excited about? Who are you? You got Noah Schultz at AAA, made his first start a couple of days ago there. You've got Hagen Smith, who is throwing again. We'll see when he makes his next start in AA. Braden Montgomery tearing up high A. You've got George Wolkow down in low A, who's having a lot of success as of late. Who for you, Courtney, is somebody who has yet to arrive, who you are most anticipating getting to guaranteed rate?
So my Baseball Isn't Boring podcast is ran by Rob Bradford, who works for WEEI in Boston. And as soon as that Garrett Crochet trade was made with the Red Sox, I immediately contacted him and asked him his thoughts on the prospects that we were getting. And his immediate reaction to me was, Braden Montgomery, if everything works out and he stays healthy, that is a sure all-star coming your way. So for me, Braden Montgomery is the guy to start really paying attention to. He's tearing it up, as we said. He is a guy that I actually got a chance to interview in Sox Fest. He was very determined and excited to get out and show what he can do because he was hurt during the draft, is crazy to think about, but he was hurt during the draft. So he was chomping at the bit to get out there and show what he can do, and he has certainly done that at the minor league level. So knowing that background about Braden, I think if all goes well and all stays healthy, that is the guy that the Sox fans will really embrace in a year.
Courtney Finnicum joining me for another moment here on White Sox Weekly. Okay, Courtney, so what are your thoughts about Will Venable so far this season? Have you made any determination about what you've seen from him? The one hard thing is, based on what the roster was coming into the season after having lost 121 games last year, how quickly can a rookie manager realistically be asked to turn around a ball club? So what have you seen from Will Venable so far this season that you've liked and maybe something that you haven't liked so much?
So one thing, and I agree with that, it is hard to really judge Will right now in the roster he has. I mean, we talk about the lineups a lot on social media. There's only so much he can do at this point. One thing that I have really enjoyed with Will is his accountability. You know, he's not afraid to basically say that, listen, you know, this is where we are right now as a team. I think that there has been improvements in communication with where we are as a team compared to Pedro. And one thing that I have seen is his ability to stick up for his players. You know, we saw in Texas over the weekend him get into a very fiery shouting match with the umpire behind home plate, which Sox fans love that. They love seeing a manager have that fire for his team, stick up for his players. And from everything that I've heard in that clubhouse, Will is the guy to talk to as far as leadership goes. He is a true leader. His coaching staff is solid. It seems like the players really enjoy playing for him, which I felt like in the last regime, that's not what was going on. So that is one thing that I have seen that I've liked. Accountability, sticking up for his players, and working with what he has. You know, I mean, again, I know we complain about the lineups, but there's only so much he can do. So I feel like mostly it's been positive for me with Will. I think that talking to other people in baseball as well that are outside the White Sox organization have also said really good things about Will. I also think that's very encouraging. So as of right now, no real negatives at this point. I can only see him going up with this team as it gets better.
That is the voice of Courtney Finnicum. You can check out her podcast. She does the Pitch and Moan portion of Baseball Isn't Boring, and she's got Aaron Rowan lined up here in the upcoming week. So check it out. Anything else you want to mention, Courtney, before I spring you?
Let's just get another win today against Berrios. He usually pitches us tough, but got to keep it going somewhere, right? Let's keep up the good vibes.
Absolutely. Oh, you know what, Courtney, let me mention, too, on the way out here, because I was chuckling to myself. I knew I had reached out to you to have you on this week, and then on Thursday, sure enough, I see Grady Sizemore walking through the clubhouse wearing the black and white Baseball Isn't Boring t-shirt, and so I tweeted you and just let you know, hey, just heads up, Grady's sporting the t-shirt, and then you clued me in. You're like, he wears it every day.
He has literally come on our podcast and has said, this is a shirt I wear every single day. So every time Sox fans see Grady Sizemore in the dugout, just know he's wearing the Baseball Isn't Boring t-shirt underneath. I love that.
I can attest to it. And my guess is, Courtney, that you guys probably sprung for the comfy t-shirt. So if you have one laying around, feel free to send it my way and I'll sport it from time to time as well. Okay.
I will absolutely send it your way, Jeff. I appreciate that.
All right. Courtney Finnicum of Baseball Isn't Boring. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Again, Courtney Finnicum, check out her podcast, Baseball Isn't Boring. She does the Pitch and Moan portion, and she has Aaron Rowan lined up for next week, so check it out. Obviously, Sox fans love Aaron Rowan, so it certainly should be a good conversation. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark next Sunday, June 29th, as the White Sox take on the San Francisco Giants and Rafael Devers at 1:10 p.m. The first 7,500 fans in attendance will receive a Southside legend, Louis Aparicio bobblehead, presented by United, Chicago's hometown airline. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. All right, when we come back, there is a man who is absolutely tearing up this city playing baseball behind the plate. He's doing it at Wrigley. He is unstoppable. Cal Raleigh, the big dumper. We have to talk about what he's doing. We'll do that next right here on White Sox Weekly.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at @ESPN_Chicago.
Cal Raleigh peppers this out towards left field, and this ball is gone. Cal Raleigh, with his 28th home run this year, now tied for the most home runs by a catcher before the All-Star break in the history of baseball. He has tied the all-timer Johnny Bench. Oh, this is smashed down the line. This ball is gone. It's out of Wrigley. It's a go-ahead two-run home.
historic blast. Now more home runs than any catcher ever in the history of baseball before the All-Star break. Number 29, Cal Raleigh.
That is right. The big dumper just absolutely dumping all over the Cubs yesterday with a couple of home runs. He also had a grand slam a couple days ago in which he, or I'm sorry, not a grand slam. He drove in six. I think he had a three-run shot in that game. He's just absolutely tearing it up, becoming an emerging superstar. Casual baseball fans were probably fairly familiar with Cal Raleigh. He's the platinum glove winner last season for the Mariners. So he's a great defensive catcher in addition to being a bona fide power threat who usually hits third or fourth in the Mariners lineup. But this season, he's absolutely taken it into a completely different level. Last year, Cal Raleigh hit 34 home runs and drove in 100 for the Mariners in 153 games. He hit 220. So his batting average lacks a little bit. At least it has in the previous couple of seasons. But the year prior to that in 2023, Cal Raleigh hit 232. He had a 306 on base. He hit 30 homers, and he drove in 75. Wasn't hitting nearly as high in the order, so the RBIs were a bit down. But again, this season so far, 29 home runs in 73 games. You heard he broke Johnny Bench's record for most home runs by a catcher prior to the All-Star break. He did it in 14 fewer games than Johnny Bench accomplished his feat. And, oh, by the way, he's pacing, he being Cal Raleigh, he's pacing for 63 home runs right now. I mean, that would, now I don't anticipate that he will get to that number, but just to be on that pace is absolutely absurd. And in addition to that, he's now hitting 273 this year, so he's brought the batting average up significantly. He's become a more well-rounded hitter for the Mariners. And he also has an on-base percentage where he's getting on base above 370 at this point. He's become an elite hitter along with a great defensive catcher. And I don't think anybody envisioned this type of player. He's 28 years old in the prime of his career. And honestly, doing the stats that he's putting together behind the plate, and he DHs occasionally just to get him off his legs a little bit, usually when the Mariners will have a day game after a night game, he'll usually DH the next day because he's far too valuable not to have in the lineup. He's just that good. And it's fascinating because the Mariners did ink him to an extension in the offseason, so they have him locked up long term. But they got him at a very reasonable rate when you consider what he's doing right now. I think a lot of people think of Julio Rodriguez as the superstar in the Mariners, but I'm telling you, Cal Raleigh is becoming that and then some, as the Mariners inked him to a six-year, $105 million extension in the offseason. So they've locked up their catcher and their bona fide MVP candidate, who is setting all sorts of records for them this year, and he did so yesterday at the behest of the Cubs, and they were not happy with that. The Mariners went on to win 9-4 yesterday, and I can't believe he's doing what he's doing as a catcher. I'm just fascinated to see where this ends up going, because it just feels like you're going to wear down a little bit doing what you're doing behind the plate. But if you want to understand what Raleigh's doing, not just as a catcher, but the most home runs by a Mariner before the All-Star break, 98, Ken Griffey Jr. hit 35. 94, Ken Griffey Jr. hit 33. 97, Ken Griffey Jr. hit 30. We've got Cal Raleigh with 29 in 2025, with plenty of games to go, by the way, before the All-Star game actually hits. And then Ken Griffey Jr. hit 29 in 1999. So basically, it's Cal Raleigh and Jr. when it comes to hitting home runs before the All-Star break. Absolutely ridiculous to do what he's doing. Everybody's just handing over the AL MVP to Aaron Judge if he stays healthy. I'll tell you what, you're going to have to give Cal Raleigh a little bit of extra credit for doing that, putting up those numbers as a catcher. It's just a grueling position to do that as well as he does it defensively. Again, platinum glove winner last season, which is the best catcher, defensive catcher in all of baseball. He won that last year. So to be a great defensive catcher and the best hitter in your lineup, it's absurd. And you just don't see this. And obviously, breaking Bench's record shows you that we haven't seen it before. So, and I told Brendan Riley, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, shame on us, because last Saturday we actually did a poll question on X, who is the best switch hitter in all of baseball? And because, I think partially because Cal Raleigh, his batting average prior to this season has been around 200, 220. Obviously, he's had a lot of pop, and he draws the occasional walk, but, you know, the on-base was around 310, so he didn't leap to mind. We omitted Cal Raleigh from our as an option of who is the best switch hitter in baseball. Yes, he's doing this as a switch hitter as well. He's prodigiously powerful in the heart of the Mariners lineup. He's the heart of their team. He manages the pitching staff. And, oh, by the way, he's a switch hitter. Shame on us, Brendan Riley, for not including Cal Raleigh. I think he may have actually gone ahead and won it. Jose Ramirez, Len Casper, and Darren Jackson were both quick to answer Jose Ramirez, and he did run away and win. Maybe Cal Raleigh would have actually given Jose Ramirez a bit of a race. We also had Francisco Lindor and Ketel Marte as our other options, but we certainly should have put Cal Raleigh in that mix because he is just awesome and a fun player to watch, and you just can't seem to get him out. So just worth noting, I wanted to mention that because it was occurring in town, and when you're setting records that Johnny Bench previously set, well, you're worth a mention here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, James Fox will catch us up with what we need to know about what's going on in the White Sox minor league system. He does a great job covering the White Sox. He did break the news that Grant Taylor was coming up when the White Sox did announce that. So James Fox joins me next right here on White Sox Weekly.
On your phone, the ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Join us for $5 Tuesdays. All fans will enjoy a specially priced $5 concessions menu, including draft beers from Miller Lite or Modelo, Garrett Popcorn, Stadium Buttery, Vienna Beef Hot Dogs or Polish Sausages, Beggar's Pizza Slices, Nachos, and select Coca-Cola products. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Tuesdays. My pleasure now to be joined by James Fox, who is locked in on all things, not just White Sox at the major league level, but if you need to know what's going on down at the minor league level, there is not a better follow on Twitter for Sox fans. I do encourage you to follow him on X. He's James Fox 917 there. And you can also check out his podcast, Future Sox. James, my pleasure to have you on White Sox Weekly, my friend. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff.
All right, James. So probably should have had you on a little bit earlier in the season because there's so many guys at the major league level all of a sudden who have come from the minor league level. Before we get into, you know, drilling down on what's going on the farm, let's talk a little bit about some of the young rookies who have already made their debuts. I'll give you your choice here. Where do you want to start? Because Chase Meidroth, any of the rookies, Chase Meidroth, Edgar Carroll, Kyle Teal, Grant Taylor, any of the pitchers, feel free. Wilkerman Gonzalez last night. Who do you want to start with? Who are you most excited about who's already arrived?
Yeah, I mean, first, I guess it's just at least it's interesting, right? Like, I was expecting this, but not as soon as it happened. Like, it seemed like that three-week period there where it was like they're discarding veterans for prospects. Like, I just wasn't quite ready for it. I think the catchers are probably the most interesting, right? Just because it's like two catchers that you'd like to see play the majority of the time, but they can't, right? Because only one catcher can play. So then it's like, what do you do? Do you DH the catcher even, you know, with the issues that causes, right? Like if you have to lose a DH or whatever, is the guy going to play first? So I think that's pretty interesting. I think it's interesting that they're both up. I kind of thought, you know, and I think a lot of people did, that they would leave Teal down just if he really hasn't caught that much. So I just thought he was going to be at Charlotte for longer, but obviously his bat like seemed to force the issue. And then I just think I'm fascinated by the whole Grant Taylor thing because I, you know, I don't love what they're doing with Grant Taylor. Like I would rather see if you can develop him as a starting pitcher first. But I don't know what the innings limit is, and I don't know what their, you know, their biomechanics say. And, you know, I generally trust this new pitching department that they've put together. So, you know, I'm going to be intrigued and watch it. I don't love the idea of already deciding that that guy's a reliever. So I'm really hoping that, you know, it's just kind of a matter of getting him to the big leagues because he's too good for the minors, and while not closing off the possibility of him starting at some point in the future.
Yes. Now, James Fox joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I will say I played earlier this morning, James. Grant Taylor joined Chuck Garfine on the White Sox Talk podcast, and it sounded, because Chuck asked him, hey, you know, do you still think about starting? And Grant Taylor said, you know, it's something, you know, he still thinks about, and they're not closing it off for next year. That's also something that Chris Getz has spoken about a couple of times now regarding Grant Taylor, that, you know, next season they're not shutting that door. So your concern, I think, is founded, but the good news is, at least publicly, the White Sox continue to say, and they continue to sounds like tell Grant Taylor that, hey, I think you're onto it, right? Like, I think it's about limiting his innings this year, not pushing him too hard as he's coming back, and then kind of getting it through, seeing him establish himself, and then next spring training, we'll see where they go with him, right? I think that's probably the plan. And so I'm with you. I think Brian Bannister, you know, I don't want to give complete blind faith here, but as a Sox fan, watching him operate the pitching department gives me a lot of optimism for the future. So I feel good about that in that regard. To your point about the catchers, though, another thing that I completely agree with, I'm concerned that Kyle Teal, like Edgar Carroll, if he's not going to be catching, I know everybody loves his ability as a hitter, but the power, James, for me, it obviously is not there yet. Maybe it will come. Maybe he'll be a, you know, a 10 to 15 homer guy if he gets a chance to play every day. But honestly, I don't know if I love Edgar Carroll being your DH on days that Kyle Teal is catching, right? So it is a curious spot the White Sox have put themselves in, especially when you look at how Will Venable likes to manage and use everybody on his roster for the most part. You know, I feel like Will might have managed himself into a bit of a predicament the other day because he only had Kyle Teal left on the bench. He had to go play left field when Mike Tauchman got injured. So I'm with you. It does, but I guess Teal's bat forced the issue to that point. So maybe that's just where we're at with the White Sox, is if a player has shown us that he's ready to go, they're not going to hold him back for any reason. They want to let them graduate to the majors. So maybe, I guess, that's something where it feels like it's a new regime and they're approaching things differently. So maybe that's, I guess, the positive spin on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of their bats play as catchers, right? But yes. I'm not sure that they play as regulars elsewhere.
Yes. No, that's well put. That's perfectly said. James Fox of Future Sox podcast. You could check it out. It's a great information if you're a Sox fan who needs more in-depth coverage of what's going on in the minor leagues. So what's James, what'd you think about Noah Schultz's first start at AAA this past week?
Yeah, I think it was fine. I've said all year, like, the big thing with Noah Schultz that I'm looking for is just like the pitch counts and the innings. Like, I want him throwing five innings a start. I didn't really care that much about the results in Birmingham. Like, I could tell that they had him working on stuff because he wasn't using his whole arsenal. Like, he just, you know, he added a cutter last year with the help of Brian Bannister that was pretty nasty that guys didn't hit. And then he completely stopped throwing it, which was strange, right? Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of times with these guys, it's like he's going to need a third pitch to get righties out in the majors that he doesn't need in the minors. So there's just all sorts of, you know, things, and pitching in Charlotte's not great, and a lot of ballparks in the International League aren't great. So I do think it was interesting that they wanted to see him tackle AAA, because I wasn't sure that they would. But there's, you know, there's very clearly a reason why they want him there. But yeah, I'm more focused on just, you know, hopefully he can get up to like 120 innings or so this year, and then he'll be right on track.
James Fox joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. White Sox and Blue Jays coming your way. First pitch at 2:07, game two of their three-game sets in Toronto. What about Braden Montgomery, James? Because he was off to a great start, so hot that obviously they didn't have to keep him down at low A for very long. He has graduated to Winston-Salem, where he had some initial success. He hit a bit of a bump and has been better as of late. What do you think the long-term prognosis is for Braden Montgomery? When do you think he could arrive at right field?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything goes according to plan. He's like a year behind Kyle Teal, probably. So I think it's good if, you know, he gets it back together, like at Winston-Salem. He had some struggles, but I mean, like, that's just numbers normalizing. I mean, his BABIP was really high, and it's not uncommon, right? But he's still, I mean, like a top 50-ish outfield prospect in baseball. I think if he finishes this season in Birmingham, you'll come into next season with a big league spring training invite, some Charlotte time, and then if everything goes according to plan, he's on next year's team at some point. I'd be pretty surprised if it's to start 2026 at this point, but, you know, somewhere in there, May, June, maybe even earlier, if he's good. But, yeah, I think he, you know, definitely looks like, you know, he's going to get the first crack at being like the right fielder of the future, essentially. And then we'll see how he does, like, once he gets to the majors, like the rest of these guys who we're kind of watching right now.
Okay. So I think you're right. Speaking of, though, potential right fielders of the future, what about George Walkau, who's in Class A Kannapolis right now? And he's been killing it as of late. You know, the local kid from Downers Grove, what have you seen from him? What do you think the timeline could be for him? How much does he need to do to prove that he can actually have a chance? You know, I mean, I think he's definitely further behind, but like, what does, I guess, the future look like if both Walkau and Montgomery can play at the same time?
Yeah, I think it's just all about his, like, strikeouts. I think, you know, he's come a long way in the last 6 weeks. He struggled at the beginning. I think when George gets, you know, pull happy sometimes down there and he runs into problems, when he's used the whole field, he's been a lot better. But the one thing the organization has always said about that kid is that they think he can handle all of the struggles because he's just got such good makeup and, you know, he's been ready to go and he looks fine in the outfield. I don't know that he sees Winston-Salem this year because I really don't know how they want to approach him. I mean, he's still 19 years old. Like, after he reclassified, he's just always been so young. The power potential is immense, obviously. But, you know, you can't strike out 40% of the time in the low minors and then, you know, think that there's like a big league future necessarily. So he had a lot to kind of clean up, but he's begun to do those things. He's been pretty good over the last 6 weeks down there.
I saw you tweet earlier, or I guess last night, James, about the Cuban righty Yoel Rodriguez. What should Sox fans know about him? What has he done to catch your eye? What do we need to know about a future pitcher for the Sox here in Rodriguez?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of their most recent international signings. And it's informative, I think, because he was signed by new international director David Keller, whereas like the rest of the signing class, because of when it was January 15th, those are still a lot of Marco Patti players. I like that Yoel was identified in December, signed out of Cuba, and he's not a 20-something, right? He was 16 years old out of Cuba. So we don't know a ton. It's not that many innings. I mean, three innings every time, but it's loud stuff and it's strikeouts. So that's one of the things with DSL prospects. You know, you look at high walk rates and loud tools, but I mean, they're playing, you know, down there. Sometimes that's like the equivalent of, you know, like high school ball sometimes, sure, essentially. Sure. So then you see, you know, when they come stateside and, you know, some of these guys finally start to figure it out, it's going to be, you know, just like a long pathway. But they've done a better job of like signing teenage pitchers and kind of harnessing them. And I'm just curious to see, just with all the changes they've made to infrastructure down there, they've spent real money, they've added cameras, they've done all the things that all the other teams have been doing for a really long time, like they're finally doing now. So, you know, I'm just like trying to look down there and see what's informative, basically.
No, it's a great point. And it's, it kind of leads me to what I was thinking about to ask you next. It does feel like, you know, we're about a little less than 2 years into Chris Getz's tenure as the top man of baseball operations for the White Sox here. And it certainly feels like the White Sox have done a lot of investing now in the minor league system. And do you feel good about where the organization is going? The record at the major league level clearly is not in a spot where Sox fans can get excited, but do you have optimism for the future, James?
I mean, I do, because I think that there's like a plan in place and everybody uses the synergy word, right? But all the departments are finally working together. I do think they're doing their best job of developing players that they've done, like, since I've kind of been doing this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, along with that, like you can't just add 20 players in the draft every year and 20 players internationally. Like you have to find players, right? And you have to make good trades, and they don't have a ton to trade that's going to bring back a ton. So I'm curious to see what happens. They're going to have to spend some money. And I know White Sox fans hear that, and it's kind of like, oh, like, you know, they're never going to. And, you know, that it's just, that's part of this. They're going to have to spend like where they have holes essentially to kind of finish this thing. But, you know, I do feel a lot better about it than I do maybe the day that Chris Getz was hired, mm-hmm. just because I think he's run this organization like an outside hire would, where he's just brought in a whole ton of people from smart organizations and put them in roles and let them do their jobs. And I think, you know, a lot of this has been positive outside of the big league record and some of the injuries and some of the other stuff.
James Fox of the Future Sox podcast joining me for another couple minutes here on White Sox Weekly. All right, James, so let's turn our attention to the Major League Baseball draft. Do you have any players that have caught your eye that you're hoping the White Sox might be targeting in the upcoming draft with the 10th overall pick?
Yeah, I've always loved the idea of like taking prep players early. I think those guys are the guys that end up like on top 100 prospect list soon, and I think they're better developed than they've ever been, and they get to the majors quicker than they ever have. They're linked to some of them. JoJo Parker is a high school shortstop out of Mississippi who, you know, might have the best hit tool in the draft. He's probably going to have to move off shortstop. He's been linked to the White Sox a lot. Billy Carlson is another shortstop out of Corona High School in California. I really think they would like to take one of these prep shortstops. But when you pick 10th, you know, I think there's like a consensus of players up there at the top. And if somebody falls to you, it could quickly like alter your plans. Last year, I came on this show, I think Shea was hosting, and I was certain that they were going to take a bat, and they took Hagen Smith. So, you know, like it's just,
yeah,
it's interesting, right? I think all the intel says that they would love to take a bat. The college class isn't great.
Yeah.
So I, you know, if you made me guess, I'd say it's one of like the high school infielders that's on the board at 10, but you know, they could easily take another college lefty, and we're all like, okay, like we've seen the MO now basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Schultz, Smith, and now you need another power lefty arm, right? To compliment it. No, I'm with you. I'm not going to lie. I'm very closely monitoring Jack Caglione. And certainly he had his first two homers the other nights in the same game. So he's obviously the one, you know, guy who I'm monitoring closely and will be comparing for a long time to Hagen Smith, probably, you know, for better or for worse. Hopefully Hagen Smith can have himself a Chris Sale type run, and nobody, or Garrett Crochet, we'd settle for that too. And nobody would really bat an eye at it. But certainly it's you're right about the bat. It certainly seems like that would not be a bad fit for the White Sox organization. Anything, James, that I haven't hit on, because obviously I've got all my questions, but is there anything, White Sox fans, you haven't, I haven't given you an opportunity to talk about that you think we should be aware of in the minor league system or just in general?
Yeah, I don't know that they have a ton of impact like coming immediately, but I do think the bullpen is kind of interesting. I mean, Rickelman Gonzalez was just brought up. He's been really good, like in a relief role, or not necessarily really good because he was in Charlotte, but the stuff looks really good. Fans got to see it last night, right? Mm-hmm. I think Peyton Paulette and Jairo Uriarte, both at Charlotte, both were converted starters. Those guys could also be part of this bullpen, along with Grant Taylor and Wickelman Gonzalez, where you have four young guys that you actually think could be pretty good, and they could be on the next pretty good White Sox team. So I find that interesting. And then just the whole Colson Montgomery thing. Like, I think he was like a week away from a call up before he got hit on the hand down there.
Yes.
I think they're,
I'm so with you,
know,
you James.
Like,
it looked like he had figured it out.
Well, and they don't, I just don't think they want to leave him down there to potentially struggle again. They'd rather have those struggles come in the majors. So I just, if he, you know, if it's like a consistent, you know, 10 to 14 days of him being pretty good, like I'm expecting to see him at some point.
Yeah, no, I have no inside information on that, but I was thinking the same thing. I think I mentioned it the other day to someone over here at the station that I was like, if he can just put together 5-6 more games, you know, he could be getting a call here soon. It wouldn't have surprised me, but he has been in a little bit of a funk as of late, so we'll see if he can turn things around, because I think you're absolutely right, especially with, you know, how much longer do they want to see Vinny Capra continue to play shortstop, but feels like not.
Yeah, no, I think, and the White Sox are the, you know, they're the one organization that And look, of course, they're going to say this publicly, right? But a lot of high-level people there think that Colson Montgomery can play shortstop. So he'll start there, and, you know, we'll see what happens. Whether that means he moves long-term, who knows, right? But yeah. I think that's definitely the position to start.
James, appreciate the insight, my man. We will be checking you out on the Future Sox podcast. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Again, that is James Fox. Check him out, Future Sox podcast, for plenty of detailed information regarding the White Sox farm system. Keep you up to date on what you need to know about all the future Sox major leaguers. Hey, Sox fans, be at Wright Field next Friday, June 27th, to see artist Flo Rida perform a post-game concert presented by Coca-Cola after the White Sox take on the Giants at 6:40. Don't miss your chance for an up-close on-field experience. Exclusive on-field passes are on sale now with limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, noon to 3, ESPN Chicago.
He drives one in the air out into deep left field. That ball is gone! A home run! First hit with the White Sox. Leaves the ballpark. And it's 1-0.
Well, just on cue when you say he's looking for his first hit. There it is, with authority the other direction.
Ryan Noda with his first hit as a member of the White Sox. It was a home run. Yes, it was. That's how you do it. And found this funny. Well, and by the way, Ryan Noda from Illinois, with Fox Lake. So, local kid. Big fan of Portillo's, by the way. A huge fan. I was talking with him in the clubhouse, I think it was on Wednesday before the game got rained out. Maybe it was Tuesday. But he is a big fan of Portillo's, to the point where he knows, I believe there's 4 locations in Arizona for spring training. He's locked in and knows when he needs to go where and where the locations are at, because he definitely had them all off the top of his head. He was ready to go, and he even shared his order, which he recited it so quickly, I didn't even have a chance to jot it down. But I do remember large cheese fries was part of the order for Ryan Noda. So big Portillo's fan, grew up in Illinois, Fox Lake. And he, funny enough, he hits the home run. And his mom was at the game on the doubleheader on Thursday when he did hit his first hit as a White Sox, and she shared the story on CHSN with Connor McKnight about their old ritual growing up, and after seeing him hit a home run, it spurred her to do something. This is Connor McKnight with Ryan Noda's mother.
You told me a cool story. You and Ryan have a tradition dating back to Little League for when he hits a home run. Can you kind of explain that and show me the gift that you bought Ryan?
Yes. Ever since he was little, if he gets a home run, he gets ice cream. Otherwise, you don't get ice cream or any treats. We also did it for double plays when they were younger. In between games today, I was walking with my sister-in-law through the park, and we passed the store. And we see this shirt that has a big, huge ice cream sundae on it with the White Sox hat. And I said, oh, my gosh, if he hits a home run for the first time for the White Sox, I have to buy that shirt. So needless to say, I have that shirt.
Let's see the shirt. You got to show us the shirt. This is fantastic stuff. On the day Ryan Noda hits his first home run in almost a year in Major League Baseball, he gets an ice cream T-shirt.
Yes, it was a White Sox T-shirt with the Sox sundae on the back. And so Ryan Noda's mom picked up the T-shirt for him and gave it to him after he had his first White Sox hit, because it was a home run. So we should start calling Ryan Noda the ice cream man, I think, just because it'd be lovely to see him hit a home run today for the White Sox against the Blue Jays. I'm Jeff Meller, White Sox Weekly, every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage. Pregame show starts at 1:30 today, and White Sox Blue Jays first pitch coming your way at 2:07 at Rogers Center. It'll be Aaron Civale up against Jose Barrios. So Ryan Noda actually is hitting leadoff today for the White Sox. He's DHing and hitting leadoff. So I'll get you the full lineup here coming up shortly on White Sox Weekly and in the pregame show. Let's pause 10 seconds for legal for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP, WTDC, HD2 Chicago. A good call.
Karma Brands radio station.
White Sox fans, celebrate the unforgettable 2005 World Series champions during the 05 reunion weekend, July 11th through the 13th. Catch Burley's statue unveiling on July 11th, special autograph session on the 12th, and special events honoring the team that brought a title back to the Southside. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/2005. I'm Jeff Meller on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, Len Casper joined Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. A fun conversation. We'll share a little bit of that with you. And also, we'll let you hear from George Wolkow, who I talked about with James Fox. Well, he joined Connor McKnight on Connor's podcast, and we'll let you hear a little bit of that as well. Plenty to do right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play AM FM HDN app.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly. White Sox and Blue Jays coming your way. 2:07 first pitch. Pre-game coverage officially starts at 1:30, but this is extended pre-game coverage with White Sox Weekly every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pre-game show. White Sox lineup today, it'll be Ryan Nota DHing and leading off. Miguel Vargas plays first base and hits second. Andrew Benintendi, off of back-to-back games with home runs, including a grand slam, he will bat third today. Luis Robert Jr. in center, cleaning up. Lenin Sosa plays second base and bats fifth. Edgar Caro doing the catching. He'll be batting sixth today. Josh Rojas at third base hits seventh. Austin Slater in right field, eighth. And then Vinny Capra, the shortstop, will round out the lineup for Will Venable against Jose Berríos. For the Blue Jays, it will be Bo Bichette at short leading off. Lukes in right field batting second. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. batting third and playing first base. Alejandro Kirk doing the catching and cleaning up. George Springer at DH hits fifth. Ernie Clements, the third baseman, hits sixth. Andres Jimenez at second bats seventh. Davis Schneider in left field hitting eighth. And then Miles Straw will be in center field and batting ninth against Aaron Civale for the White Sox. Len Casper joined Waddle and Sylvie yesterday, as he does every Friday, and it was an interesting conversation. Sylvie asked Len to begin the interview about where the White Sox are at, because they were in the midst of an 8-game losing streak prior to having won last night. And so Sylvie mentioned, look, the White Sox record clearly isn't great, but at the same time, it feels like it's much different than what they were at last year. So, Len, where are you at with this White Sox team so far this year?
Yeah, it's tricky because nobody's happy about losing 8 in a row, but the White Sox are an unfathomable 4-20 in one-run games, including 0-14 on the road. It's almost impossible to contemplate that. Obviously, good teams are generally going to have a good record in one-run games. Bad teams should have bad records in one-run games. But sometimes there are some outliers. I like the blowout record a little bit better. That is when you win by five or more or lose by five or more. So just for example, now, the Cubs lost by five today, correct?
Yes.
But they're okay, even with their loss today, the Cubs are 15-7 in blowout games. So if you only told me that record and didn't tell me anything else about their season, I would say they're probably in first place, right? So the one-run record thing gets a little funky, and I think the main reason, if you had to pinpoint anything right now, some of it is bad luck, but I think just offensively, they haven't been able to put together rallies or get guys in scoring position and then get them in, right? They have a low batting average overall, but I think the worst batting average with runners in scoring position. So that's the next thing, and if you can add, you know, a hitter or two to this lineup that can really make it go, you might start winning some of the closer games.
Len, I read a really interesting fact earlier today I was sharing with the guys. Sox lead the majors in rookie war. Sixth amongst hitters, number one on the pitching side of things. How encouraged are you by what you're seeing from a number of the young guys?
Yeah, it's been good. It has been good, Tom. I mean, they have 10 rookies right now. They added two more to the bullpen. Wickelman Gonzalez, a hard-throwing right-hander, another guy acquired in the Boston trade, and a lefty named Jacob Hollish, who was an undrafted free agent. So we haven't seen them yet, but you know, Maidroth's been great.
Edgar Caro's been really good situationally. He's getting better behind the plate. Kyle Teal's still getting used to playing at the big league level. I think we've seen good signs and good energy from him. You know, and Vargas is still not an old guy. He's not a rookie, but I kind of do put him in that category, and he's been the White Sox best player since the season started. So I think for me, when you start to see a lot of contributions from players acquired in trades for the big names, right, the Crochets, the Giolitos, the Fetties, guys like that, that I think should make White Sox fans feel pretty good about the next couple of years.
What was the big change for Vargas, Len?
Well, the hand thing was the big thing, right? I think through late April, he was at 139, and then he just lifted his hands a little bit in his stance, and when his hands were lower, he would move his hands up in his load to get ready to hit, and with his hands a little higher, it just allows him to be a little quicker to the ball. And then I think some of the confidence that he gained from some good performances just kind of built on top of that. And he's been absolutely great.
Len, you mentioned Teal. Is his ultimate position at this level going to be at first base? Or who will be the full-time first baseman going forward in the future?
Well, that's a position that remains to be seen after the trade of Vaughn. I think we don't know who the White Sox first baseman of the future is going to be. I think the goal is Teal and Caro will share the catching duties long term. Teal can play some other positions, but right now they view him pretty much as a catcher. So I think first base is wide open.
Len, when you look at the guys who possibly could be traded, I know you have to do their games, but there are some obvious names on this list. If you were a team, who would you be most interested in right now from the Sox?
Yeah, I think Chris Getz has been very open about where things stand right now, and he's been pretty transparent about Luis Robert Jr. That's kind of the big name that stands out. Mike Tauchman has had a really nice year. He's dealing with a day-to-day groin issue and had some hamstring problems earlier, but when he's been healthy, he's been really good. So I think any veteran player on this team who has a good performance for any stretch of time, I think teams are going to be interested in. Adrian Hauser has been really good on the pitching side. Nobody knows what the trade deadline will look like and what will be available, but I would guess the White Sox might not be as active as they were last year when they had a few bullpen arms that people were interested in, but we'll see.
Len, channel your inner Walt Riniak and tell me, why has it gone so wrong with Luis Robert at the plate this year?
I wish I knew. I think everybody wishes. He's made tweaks. He's made some adjustments. There have been moments where it looks like he's kind of figured it out, and then he kind of goes back to swinging early at bad pitches, gets behind in the count, and then sometimes takes a fastball right down the middle, which sometimes would indicate that, you know, he's maybe thinking a little bit too much. But when I watch him play, he always looks hitterish to me for some reason. He's great defensively, we know, and he can run the bases well, but he just hasn't been on base enough, and I don't know why. I really don't. Right now, his slash line is 190, 273, so he is taking walks. It's a bad on base, but compared to his batting average, not bad. And he's slugging 303. That's the big one for me. He should be hitting more home runs. He's got six right now.
Well, Len was prescient because he said he's still looking very hitterish, and sure enough, last night, Luis Robert Jr. connected for a 441-foot home run, the longest home run of the season for the White Sox. So let's hope that Louie has gotten out of his funk and now can build on that. That would be fun. It is always fun, and it feels like the White Sox offense just really does thrive when Luis Robert Jr. is swinging a hot stick, and so I'm hoping that last night was the start of good times for Luis Robert Jr., and maybe he can continue to build off of that. One more thing I wanted to play quickly here. Last night, Len Casper and Darren Jackson during the broadcast were discussing Rafael Devers, who was welcoming in his former buddies, the Boston Red Sox, to his new digs in Houston, San Francisco, as the Giants are hosting the Red Sox this weekend. Now, the Red Sox won last night, but it was interesting to hear Len and DJ discuss the Red Sox deal of Devers to the Giants and just kind of what went on in that whole situation, which I will react to here in a moment.
Well, it's been a busy week or so for Rafael Devers. Got traded from the Red Sox to the Giants. The Red Sox are in San Francisco tonight, so he met the media before the game. And one interesting thing he said tonight, quote, "I put up some good numbers in Boston, and I feel like I earned some respect. If they had asked me at the beginning of spring training, yes, I would have played first." Now, they didn't have an opening at first until Tristan Casas got hurt.
Right.
About a month into the year.
It's a bad look. That's all there is to it. I mean, I don't know what Rafael Devers is thinking about. He was a legend in Boston. He signed a long-term contract. He's going to be there. I get the part. And the one thing I do understand is when they now displace you and say you're no longer the third baseman, we found somebody a little bit better. Okay, you get your feelings hurt. Move on. I mean, this is your team. Do whatever they're asking. Just go club the baseball. In the end, that's what they want you to do.
Yeah, I echo DJ's sentiments there. I ranted about the Devers situation a couple weeks ago when Casas originally was injured and Devers was acting a bit like a petulant child, not wanting to even take grounders at first base because, quote-unquote, he had learned a new position in designated hitter. Let's be honest. I understand some players don't love the DH aspect because you have to sit around the entire game and then you go and take your four at-bats. But the reality is learning DH, that's not a thing. You're already a hitter at a major league level. It might be a little bit more of an inconvenience because you're used to kind of being in the game as a fielder. But the reality is that somebody has to DH. And so, hey, Rafi Devers, part of the reason you were a DH was because you were a horrible third baseman defensively. One of the worst in baseball. And the Red Sox chose to sign Alex Bregman to make their team better. And then when Casas was injured, Devers was the logical choice to ask if he could go ahead and potentially take some grounders at the first base. But because his pride was hurt and he didn't want to go ahead and be, he didn't want to be helpful to the team that was paying him or had signed him to a $300+ million contract, 10 years, he decided he was going to be a baby and pout. And so a team full of young players like the Red Sox decided, you know what, that's not a good look. It doesn't set a good tone to have the clubhouse leader, the guy, the highest paid player on the team, basically put himself in front of the team. I'm sure the Red Sox, if Rafi Devers was a butcher at first base, would have turned somewhere else. But it could have been, you know, for the betterment of the team. He chose himself over the team. And now the Giants are happy to obtain a lefty slugger, something that they've been seeking out now for years. They've been trying to sign the big slugger. They haven't had a 30 home run hitter on their roster since Barry Bonds did it, I believe in 2004. That's how long the Giants have gone without having a 30 home run hitter in their lineup, over 20 years. So they sorely need somebody. Now, I'm not sure Devers is going to hit 30 home runs in their stadium, but he certainly will be somebody who will bring a feared bat to their lineup. And the Red Sox move on, and now they will have, theoretically at least, $30 million a year to spend on something that is not a DH. So I think both teams end up being better off for it. But Devers, unfortunately, not a good look for him. And I don't think it's a good look. Like, fine, you trying to, I guess maybe he's learned from the whole situation because he said he was open to the idea when he met the media that if the Giants need him to play first base, he'll take grounders and try and figure it out. So maybe everybody will be better off for it in the long run. Hey, Sox fans, learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp presented by Wintrust. starting at $165. Kids aged 5 through 12 can register for a four-day baseball camp offered at over 35 locations throughout the Chicagoland area. Campers will receive a Sox swag bag with a custom sliding mitt, pack of Topps baseball cards, and more. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/play. When we come back, get to know one of the White Sox minor leaguers, a local kid, George Wolkow, who is from Downers Grove and is down at Single A Kannapolis. He's been tearing it up as of late. He joined Connor McKnight. I'll let you hear a little bit from George Wolkow when we come back right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESP 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Cap and Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly for a few more minutes before we get your pregame coverage started for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Blue Jays at Rogers Center. First pitch coming your way at 2:07. One of the hottest hitters in the White Sox minor leagues, George Wolkow, joined Connor McKnight on his new podcast, Road to the Rates. Get to know George Wolkow a little bit with Connor McKnight right here.
You know, you're reclassified in high school. You are super young for your level, even though you're at Canny for a second go here for a little bit of Kannapolis last year. Mm-hmm. Where you came in this offseason looking at White Sox coaches and development staff going, I want to add more contact to my game, right? Like that's mm-hmm. the thing you were looking to fix. How has that journey gone here? Because if you look at the batting averages in the first month and second month and now in June, you know, the 490 thing we're talking about, things have gotten better, but there were some struggles early on. So what was it like kind of adapting, you know, whatever plan you guys came up with to add more contact, and how have things altered here over the last, let's call it, month and a half?
Yeah, I think, honestly, from now to looking back at the start of the year, it's kind of like a mix of just getting back to my strengths. I think, you know, I work all off season in the fall out on instructs. And then in the camps before spring training, leading into spring training on improving that and being a more well-rounded hitter, a guy who could handle all pitch types and do damage on breaking balls, not just fastballs. And so I think leading into the season, it was almost like I feel like I didn't get back to the trust in my strengths, you know? And so I think over the past couple of weeks, it's been understanding, like, look, like I made contact now. Like, it's not as much of a problem as it was last year. And so how am I going to take that and turn it into the hits, turn it into the home runs? And so I think, like, for me, it's been just trusting the fact that, you know, I could stay on a lot more pitch types. I'm not swinging and missing as much. And so I don't need to swing in at every pitch. I don't need to put every ball in play. And so, you know, if I'm getting a slider first pitch and I'm seeing it and I'm swinging at it and I'm making contact with it, but, you know, maybe I line out or maybe I miss it and fly out. It's like, is that really what I want to do in the first pitch of the AB? And so I think just, you know, getting back to my strengths in a sense of, you know, looking for my pitch in my zone and being stubborn around it. And I think that recently it's been a lot better at the plate, just being more calm, more patient, having more confidence within myself so that when I do get that pitch, I don't miss it. I think, yeah, simple as that.
Yeah, that's George Wolkow on Connor McKnight's new podcast, Road to the Rate. Check it out. Good stuff there. That was just a brief moment of the conversation with Connor and, again, George Wolkow down at Kannapolis right now. He's been tearing it up as of late. Entering plan Friday, he was hitting 340 with four homers and 11 RBIs in his last 14 games in June. He was named the Carolina League Player of the Week for the week of June 9th through the 15th when he slashed 421, 522, 895 with three homers and seven ribbies during that span. So good stuff there with our good buddy Connor McKnight. That's going to do it for this edition of White Sox Weekly, but don't go anywhere. We've got your pregame show coming your way between the White Sox and Blue Jays, game number 2 of 3 at Rogers Center. Aaron Civale up against Jose Barrios says the White Sox will look to start a winning streak after their win last night. Around Major League Baseball quickly, the Yankees on top 6-0, Rays beating the Tigers 8-3, Brewers beating the Twins 2-0 right now, and the Mariners and Cubs are scoreless. All right, stick around. We're coming right back with pregame coverage on the ESP 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Hey, this is David Kaplan. I love the heat. Give me 90 degrees and a chance to be outdoors, and I'm a happy guy. But when you step out of the heat and into your home or business, I totally appreciate being able to control the temperature to make everybody comfortable. My friends at Atomatic keep your AC system running its best, no matter what Mother Nature throws at us. And if something were to break down, Atomatic can help find the best system for your space and have it back to the perfect temperature in no time. Go to Atomatic.com. That's at O-Matic.com.